words from Martin Luther King Jr. On some positions, cowardice asks the question, is it safe? Expediency asks the question, is it politic? And vanity comes along and asks the question, is it popular? But conscience asks the question, is it right? And there comes a time when we must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but we must do it because conscience tells us it is right. We will oppose any and all unjust government actions to deport, register, discriminate, or despoil. As people of conscience, we declare our commitment to translate our values into action as we stand on the side of love with the most vulnerable among us. These are words from a statement that was jointly issued by the Unitarian Universalist Association and the UU Service Committee last February, just a few months after the presidential election. The document is titled A Declaration of Conscience. Tom Andrews, the head of the UUSC at the time, explained that the declaration was issued to kick off a new campaign to speak truth to power and to take bold action in light of threats posed to many of the most marginalized amongst us, as well as threats to the environment. The UUA and UUSC urged congregations and individuals to sign the declaration. The Albany congregation did so, and I know many others, perhaps this one as well, did in the area. A declaration of conscience. I don't know for sure how our faith leaders came up with this title, but here is an interesting historical footnote. Before joining the UUSC, Tom Andrews was a congressman from Maine, and one of his mentors was Maine Senator Margaret Chase Smith, the first woman to serve in both houses of Congress. In June 1950, Smith, noted for her fierce independence, gave what is now recognized as one of the most important speeches ever delivered in Congress. The speech, entitled A Declaration of Conscience, addressed the impact of McCarthyism on America during the Cold War. Senator Joseph McCarthy had made sensational and unsubstantiated charges about communist spies penetrating government and Hollywood. In other words, fake news. According to one historian, McCarthy, quote, held the American conscience hostage to his hate-filled tactics, end quote. And until that time, no one had dared to stand up to McCarthy. Margaret Chase Smith's 15-minute speech began as follows. I would like to speak briefly and simply about a serious national condition. She then defended what she termed some of the basic principles of Americanism. These were the right to criticize, the right to hold unpopular beliefs, the right to protest, and the right of independent thought. Smith voiced concern that those who exercised those beliefs at that time risked unfairly being labeled communist or fascist. But back to the present time. Even prior to issuance of the Declaration of Conscience, then UUA President Peter Morales wrote a column entitled Sanctuary and Gospel. He noted that as people who purport to recognize the inherent worth and dignity of every person, while we should never dehumanize our enemies, quote, evil is real and must be resisted. Morales suggested that we do two things as religious people. First, we should offer sanctuary, both to each other in our congregations and to the most defenseless in our society, by becoming sanctuary congregations for so-called illegal immigrants. Second, Morales urged us to preach our unique gospel, which he summarized as follows. It doesn't have to be like this. Love must guide us, and it's up to us, meaning we cannot rely on supernatural intervention or on someone else to create the beloved community. Of course, our faith tradition boasts many individuals whose consciences led them to challenge the state. A recent issue of UU World has a cover story celebrating Henry David Thoreau and his influence on Unitarian Universalism 200 years after his birth. The author of the article notes that the Declaration of Conscience addresses a question posed in Thoreau's classic text, Civil Disobedience. Thoreau asked this question as the United States went to war with Mexico in 1848. How does it become a man to behave toward this American government today? He responded as follows. I answer that he cannot without disgrace be associated with it. I cannot for an instant recognize that political organization as my government, which is the slave's government also. Writing part of Civil Disobedience in jail in 1846, after refusing to support slavery by paying his poll tax, Thoreau explained his refusal as a necessary act of conscience. When we fail to distinguish right from wrong, Thoreau wrote, we weaken our capacity to make that distinction. The UU World author notes that the current surge in political activism is firmly rooted in Thoreau's insistence on an individual's right to resist immoral laws. The Reverend Victoria Safford, who is the minister of the White Bear UU Church in Minnesota, said her church drew from Thoreau's legacy of resisting the state when that church decided to join the New Sanctuary Movement, seeking to protect undocumented immigrants from deportation. Reverend Safford also recounted an oft-cited exchange between Thoreau and Emerson when Thoreau was in jail. When Emerson asked what Thoreau was doing in a prison cell, Thoreau reportedly responded, "What are you doing out there?" Closer to home, the Saratoga congregation has adopted a sanctuary pledge. Some of you may have seen it. It reads as follows. As a people of faith and conscience, we pledge to resist efforts to target and deport undocumented immigrants and discriminate against marginalized communities. Our congregation will always be a sanctuary for persons targeted by hate and injustice, and to the extent our resources permit, we will work alongside our friends, families, and neighbors to ensure the dignity and basic rights of all people. Reverend Joe Cleveland advises that the Saratoga congregation continues to support and be part of local efforts on behalf of the sanctuary movement, supporting direct services to immigrants, educating the public, and generally raising awareness of these issues. As many of you know, last June, we elected the first woman to ever head the Unitarian Universalist Association, the Reverend Susan Frederick Gray. She cut her teeth, so to speak, as the minister of the Phoenix, Arizona UU congregation. Some of us participated at the UU General Assembly in Phoenix in June of 2012. I know that Lois and Don Porter from this congregation were there, and perhaps others. Arizona had recently enacted probably the most repressive anti-immigration laws in the country, and UUs were there to protest. In 109-degree heat, 2,500 UUs sang, prayed, and shouted, "Shut it down," at a vigil outside the notorious Tent City, a jail established by Sheriff Joe Arpaio, who called himself America's toughest sheriff. Of course, he is now a pardoned criminal and perhaps a future Senate candidate. In her statement as a presidential candidate, Reverend Frederick Gray stressed three essential points, each of which fit nicely within the Declaration of Conscience. First, she said, we need spiritual vitality. People and families are looking for spiritual communities that seek truth to the realities of this moment in history and to prepare us for greater resiliency and love, greater resistance and moral courage. Second, we need to work with partners. The challenges we face require much deeper collaboration as we seek to build the beloved community together. And finally, in organizing for impact, Reverend Frederick Gray said we need a, quote, clear, compelling vision for who we are called to be and the willingness to put this vision at the heart of all we do. Other UU ministers have spoken passionately about letting our conscience be our guide. Galen Gingrich, the minister at All Souls Unitarian Church in New York City, said this, our work is to learn how to be angry better. Our work is to keep our anger yoked to justice. We do our work knowing that our calling is a divine calling. And one of my favorite UU preachers, the Reverend Douglas Taylor from the Binghamton Church, recently wrote a sermon entitled Integrity of Conscience. He said that our UU faith is meant for times such as these. He urges us to create congregations that are not just safe spaces for people, but brave spaces as well. He wrote this, sometimes the hard thing to do is declare justice as the central identity of our nation despite the evidence. To stand on the side of love, not when it wins, but even when love loses. We must act with both open-handed reconciliation as well as steadfastly dissent. Gentle and resolute, I will not harm you, but neither will I stand by if you harm or threaten to harm others. We Unitarian Universalists often stress the importance of deeds, not creeds. Our actions are more important than our words. And the Declaration of Conscience makes clear that the list of injustices that need to be addressed is long. I've already touched on protecting undocumented immigrants. There's the environment and climate change in particular. A decade ago, we were talking about climate refugees, people who would need to flee their low-lying countries to literally avoid drowning. But back then, we meant people from Bangladesh or Pacific Islands sitting at sea level. Now, of course, we've seen that we have climate refugees right here in our own country as Puerto Ricans stream into Florida. There's the issue of healthcare. In my view, we shouldn't use a wrecking ball on the Affordable Care Act. We should be expanding it, or even better, moving toward universal healthcare, consistent with our UU principles. Black Lives Matter and disrupting white supremacy culture is one of the key priorities of our Unitarian Universalist Association and many of our congregations. And of course, gun violence. Yes, comfort, cry with, pray for the victims, but I, and I suspect many of you, believe that this is not enough. As many have said, guns kill, so does silence. We must find a way to rid our society of so many guns. Referring to the people murdered just this week at the Florida High School, New York Times columnist David Leonhardt said this, May we honor them with anger that does not cease until the unnecessary deaths of children do. While engaging in social justice work, I think it's also important to reflect on how we are changed by doing this work. I believe that in working to repair the world, we repair our own souls as well. In a sermon given at the Albany congregation last summer, the Reverend Dick Gilbert observed that we are seldom challenged to articulate why we do this work and how it changes us. Reverend Gilbert reflected on how our social justice work stimulates our spiritual selves. He wrote this: "It is impossible to do this work without being spiritually transformed. My life has been immeasurably enriched by trying to repair my little corner of the planet. In trying to heal the world, I nurture myself. My personal mission statement, my spiritual mantra, is this: my purpose on earth is to grow a soul, to love and be loved, and to help repair the world." End of quote by Reverend Gilbert. So I guess a fair question is, what am I doing to help prepare my little corner of the world? As my fellow seminarians and I moved towards ordination as interfaith ministers last June, we had to write a statement of personal ethics. We had to write ministerial vows. And we also had to write a statement of what we intended our ministry to look like. As I tackled these assignments, I closely studied the Declaration of Conscience, as well as our Unitarian Universalist principles and purposes. My vow of ministry reads as follows: with gratitude, humility, and reverence, I vow as follows: I will seek to awaken to my true nature and to help heal and awaken others. I will respect the interdependent web of all existence. Nothing exists that is not a part of me. I will seek an ever-deepening relationship with Spirit. And I will stand on the side of love, which I've now amended to say that I will answer the call of love in light of last week's and many other sermons that I've heard. The purpose of a personal ministry statement is to turn these lofty vows into concrete actions. And so in my statement, I committed as follows: I will continue to serve as an interfaith chaplain at Albany Medical Center and to volunteer with community hospice. Along with many other UUs, including Dr. David Pratt of this congregation, I am advocating for medical aid in dying in New York State, allowing terminally ill, mentally capable adults to ask for and receive medication that they can self-administer for a peaceful death should their suffering at the end of life become unbearable. In fact, just yesterday, David and I were joined many others to lobby for medical aid in dying at the annual Black and Puerto Rican Legislators Conference in the Empire State Plaza yesterday. Thousands of people there. Given my legal background, I'll continue to provide pro bono legal representation to low-income clients who need wills, living wills, healthcare proxies. And given the federal government's targeting of undocumented people, I also am being trained in immigration law in order to provide legal representation to this threatened group of individuals. And finally, along with performing traditional ministerial rituals, weddings, memorial services, baby blessings, I believe I'm also called to serve as a spiritual director. So I've enrolled in a 2-year program that will enable me to hopefully hang up a shingle to do spiritual counseling. I firmly believe that, as Reverend Gilbert said, social justice work or sacred activism must be firmly grounded in a strong inner spiritual center. I receive several daily meditations via email as I assume many of you do as well. Joanna Macy, a Buddhist scholar and environmental activist, recently had this message for me. The most radical thing any of us can do at this time is to be fully present to what is happening in the world. Let me read that again. The most radical thing any of us can do at this time is to be fully present to what is happening in the world. So I commit to stay awake, to show up, to resist, and to help build the beloved community. Reverend Douglas Taylor asks this of us: where will you be in all of this? What do you need? And what is needed of you? It comes down to the integrity of your conscience. What does your conscience call you to do in this moment of history? What will be an act of integrity for you? Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir to a great extent, since many of you are already engaged in all sorts of social justice work. But I think we can all do more. I believe we must do more. As I draw this sermon to a close, I've asked Leah to play some reflective music as we each take a minute or two to silently identify a cause or two that most speaks most loudly from our own conscience. Please reflect further on how you can turn these intentions into action in the coming days.